Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hockey fans. Welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner, joined today by Mark Scheig and Dan Harrigan, along with our co-host Chris Lisa. And today is episode number 161, believe it or not, and our fourth annual NHL mock draft. It's going to be a great time. We're going to go through the first 15 picks in the draft, all the lottery positions, and we're going to figure out where these guys want everything slotted. Stay tuned. We're ready to go. All right, the last NHL game has been played in the season. We got as many as possible in the final, a classic final, I think, one for the ages. We'll get into that a little bit later in the show. We're joined by Mark Scheig. He covers the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Cleveland Monsters, and the Erie Otters of the OHL for thehockeywriters.com. Dan Harrigan is with us today. He is a contributing writer for the Tampa Bay Lightning Insider, and he appears on the Power Play Show, and you can find that on the Lightning Radio Network. Chris Lisa, our co-host here at the Vegas Hockey Podcast, writes for the Ion Isles FS website covering the Islanders. You can find him on Twitter at the NL King. Gentlemen, good day to all of you, sir. Chris, let me start with you. And just real quick, we want to get right into the draft here. Mark Scheig is limited on time. What about this draft, sir? What stands out to you the most?
I think what's interesting to me is from 3 to 12, one person could like someone at 3 and the next person could like that same player at 9 or 12. I think after the first two, depending upon which order they go, then after that, I think it's really fascinating.
All right, let's welcome Mark Scheig into the show. Mark, how many players that could be picked in this first 15 might we see in the NHL next season?
Two for sure, and I would say there's a possibility of a third depending on how they do over the summer. I think it's pretty obvious Jack Hughes could do it. Capo Caco can do it. The other guy that I think would be very interesting to talk about, you know, to Chris's point about their, you know, being someone that might be a little bit more liked than others depending on the team, I actually think Dylan Cousins is really close. He's got the physical makeup to do it. He actually set himself at the combine. If he has a really good summer, he feels like that he could jump right into the NHL next season.
All right, and I'll welcome in Dan Harrigan. Dan, where do you find most of the depth in this draft, forwards or defense?
Well, you know, I think it's pretty there's enough of both, but I think it's very heavy forwards, especially in the first couple rounds. I think we're going to see an awful lot of forwards being taken. You know, Chris mentioned from pick 3 through 12, it depends mostly on the team picking, and most of the players that I have on my mock draft that I'm looking at here, they're forwards. So I think it's heavy on the forwards, for at least for the first couple rounds.
All right. And what I notice is going through the rankings internationally and nationally, there's could be quite a bit of an international flavor here at first 15 picks. Mm-hmm. There's some highly ranked Russians. The Europeans in the last 5 years, I think, have really embraced the NHL style of game and are moving their way up draft boards every year. And the U.S. national team development big steps. And I think quite a few of those players could go in the top 15 as well. So let's jump right into it. We're going to get to the number one overall pick. And we got Dan Harrigan on the board for the New Jersey Devils.
And listen, mock or set up or not, I wouldn't want the GM that passes on a potential generational player. No, Capo Caco has been coming up the boards lately, but New Jersey Devils are selecting Jack Hughes number one.
Yeah, I got to agree with you there. He's all-world center, 5'10", 171 with a left-handed shot. You know, his skating is off the chart. His hockey IQ, and his vision on the ice is above every other center that we have in the draft. 112 points in 50 games last season, and his career 228 points is also a record for the NTDP. You got Nico Hischier in the draft, and now you put Jack Hughes in. You're building your depth down the center for the next 10 years, and I don't think anybody can disagree with taking Jack at number one overall. We're going to have another Hughes coming down the pipeline. So we're entering the Hughes era in the NHL, if you will. And I think that's a great pick for New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's get right into the second overall pick. The New York Rangers jump into that slot. Shiger, who are the Rangers taking? I think it's, you know, there's two players on the board and one of them is gone. So.
Yep. And it's one of the easiest picks that you can ever find yourself in when you have two great players like that and you have the second pick. I mean, you really can't go wrong either way. I mean, I agree that Hughes is the better pick in this case, but the Rangers are more than happy to take a player like Kako and, like you said, who just dominated at the world for an 18-year-old like that, where I don't think the Finns had any NHLers on their roster, like current NHLers on their roster. They still went in and won a gold medal. So it just kind of shows you the kind of player that he can be. And, you know, the Rangers rebuild all of a sudden is going to be expedited because of this. Look out in a couple of years here. You know, John Davidson back at the helm now, so a level of stability going there. And then you get a player like Kako. Tell you what, New York area hockey all the way around, Devils with Hughes, Kako with the Rangers, and then you think – Oliver Wahlstrom and Noah Dobson are on their way from the Islanders. That tri-state area, that's going to be some really fun hockey to watch.
It's going to be like maybe not so much last season, but a couple years ago when you had to do the California swing and you would go through San Jose, Anaheim, and L.A. When you got to take that New York swing through Long Island, New Jersey, and Madison Square Garden. In a couple years' time, that's going to be a gauntlet to run. There's no question about it. Kako, 6'2", 194. And as I was saying earlier about the international game embracing the NHL style of play, typically in bygone era, you would think of the Euros as the skating, the flash, the Finnish flash, by the way. But he's 6'2", 194. He's not afraid to go into the dirty areas. He'll finish his plays. He goes into the corners. He's strong on the puck when he's up against the half wall. He's in Finland's top league last year, 22 goals in 45 games. That's their league record for his age group over there. And then he led Finland with 6 goals in the World Championship, leading his team to gold medal. He's going to slot in at first line right wing in New York, and it's, you know, it's going to be the Kako Kako show there for real quick. Great first two picks. I don't think we're quite in the McDavid Eichel level on a 1-2, but not too far behind. I think these two players are as close to can't miss as you can get, and both teams in the first two slots are getting, you know, NHL quality players right out of the gate. So moving on to Chris here with the third round, Chicago Blackhawks. Who do the Chicago Blackhawks take at number three, Chris?
Well, you know, this pick screams that the Hawks were desperately in need of a center in their pipeline, and someone who could be at least a second line center. And there's a number of really interesting guys. I could just see three guys on the board without naming names. That they could take here. But here's the problem. The best player to me by far on the board after the top two is Bowen Byram. And I get it. The Hawks in their last three drafts, in their top first two rounds in their last three, have taken 5 defensemen. I get it that 4 of their 5 top prospects are defensemen, including last year's 8th overall Adam Gopokas. And I get it, they desperately need to take a center, and there's enticing players. But when you read about Byram, you know, they say, you know, just listen to these descriptions, you know, great skater, explosive, quarterbacks his team, offense, strong offensive guy patrolling his own zone could be physical, ceiling of a first-pairing defenseman, a playmaker, quick hands, heavy shot, power play quarterback in the making, dynamic offensively, tremendous upside, good decision-making with the puck. I can't pass on that player at this spot. Now, maybe Chicago tries to trade out of it. You know, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to stand Bowen and to say, I'm taking Byram, and I'm going to build my defense, which needs a lot of work going forward with Byram and Boqvist. And you know what? The other top prospects I have who are not getting close to the NHL, they're available for a trade, and I'll use them to trade for a young center. I mean, there's so many teams looking for defense. So, if I'm running the board and I'm staying at three, I'm taking Byram for the Hawks at three.
You know, I don't think you can have too many quality defensemen in your pipeline. I think the Vegas Golden Knights have two players, and we'll talk about them later, that are being looked at by the team as possibly making the club next year on defense. And we saw the Golden Knights turn their 17th overall pick, Eric Brandstrom, into Mark Stone. So if you're Chicago and you have him ranked as a future number one defenseman, puck mover, power play, elite skating ability that he has, I can't fault that pick either, Chris. I think like you said, they need help at center, but depth on defense, I don't think you can ever have too much of it. So Bowen Byram is off the board. 6'2", 195, left-handed shot. Let's move on to Dan with the fourth overall pick. This is the Colorado Avalanche from Ottawa Senators in the Matt Duchene trade. I believe number four was the worst they could have pulled out of that.
Yep.
I could be wrong in that, but
no, that's right. That's right.
Okay, as far as the percentages of the ping pong balls, number four was the worst they could have done. There's still a lot of good players on the board. So, Dan, who does Colorado take with the fourth overall pick?
And not only that, it's the first of two first-round draft picks for the Avalanche. I think the Avalanche, they're pretty set. And right now I'd say that it's, The pick is Alex Turcotte, the center. He's a 100-foot player. You know, he's speed, and I see a tremendous upside from Turcotte. And I think on that Avalanche team, don't forget that out of all the teams in the top five here, we're looking at Colorado, who won a playoff series. Because of the trade, as you mentioned, they got this early pick. So this is a team that, you know, a lot of teams maybe in the top five are missing a piece or two before they can even talk about playoffs. Colorado's already a playoff-ready team. So to add a kid like Alex Turcotte, who may not be ready this season, but is close to being NHL ready. He's the pick for Colorado at number four.
Yeah, and the other thing about Turcotte and Colorado, we know they have their big three that are offensively gifted and can put points on the board in a hurry. Turcotte is the competitive 200-foot style center, so he's going to give that second line or third line, wherever he eventually slots in, a little bit more responsibility. He might grow into a penalty-killing type two-way number three center, and it's not going to be a bad pick, and that's a good fit for Colorado. Moving on, Chris. Tread lightly, sir. Go ahead.
No, it's Mark Shiger.
Oh, is it
Shiger
gets
LA.
Shiger gets the Kings. Okay.
Yeah, he's your faith is in his hands.
Yes, tread lightly, sir.
Tread lightly on as well. 3 and 4 went as I expected, just in reverse order. So not really much of a surprise seeing Byram and Turcotte go in those spots.
Right.
the Kings need help everywhere.
Right.
Mean, if Byron was there, that would be the pick, because he's the
for
best
sure.
in my mind, the best available player. But he's gone. So look at all the centers. You've got Trevor Zegras available. You have Kirby Dach available. You have Dylan Cousins available. You have others that are available as well. So this really comes down to preference. I definitely feel like that if the first four picks break the way that they did, they're going to look at a center, and I think they need immediate help. I mean, the Gabriel Vilardi situation, I tell you what, how that's just very unfortunate. You know,
yeah.
11th overall pick, back problems, career kind of up in the air. No one really knows what's going on. So they need to get that center, and we need the guy that's the closest.
Stop that. Sorry about that, sir.
That's okay. I think the guy that's the closest to the NHL, I mentioned it at the beginning, is Dylan Cousins. And I know that there are some that are maybe a little bit down on him, maybe not thinking that he's a top five player, but just everything that he can bring to the table. Big center, would go great with Rasmus Kupari whenever he is ready. So the fifth pick for me for the Kings is going to be Dylan Cousins.
And in the past, the Kings have loved drafting big players, and he's 6'3", 183. He could still put on another 10 pounds onto that frame and be the kind of the bigger. He plays with his body. He's a physical type centerman, and that kind of in the Kings' MO, although they're going towards obviously the quicker skill-oriented, but he also carries – great skating ability with him, good vision, good hockey IQ. He can slot over to right wing too if need be. Very versatile player in the forward position. So not a bad pick for the Kings going forward, as you mentioned.
And real quick, don't discount a trade with the Kings. I mean, if they feel like that he could be available a couple spots down, given how much help they need, they're a prime candidate to be possibly trade down from the number five pick.
I think there might be a lot of moves on draft day. There's a lot of teams with cap issues that need to get under the cap, and the Kings not really in a cap crunch right now, but certainly could pick up more assets and speed their rebuild along by moving back. So that is something to keep an eye on, Shrike. Chris, coming in at number six with the Detroit Red Wings, sir, you're on the clock.
Well, if I'm running the Red Wing draft, I'm throwing stuff all over the place now, because not only is there not the defenseman that I wish was there, Byron Masai, I like a lot of the defense between 10 and 15, but it's too early to pick them. So I would say it's come draft day, if Stevie Y can't move up to the three spot to make a deal with Chicago, and Chicago-Detroit making a deal, not easy.
Forget about it.
I would look to trade back to get a defenseman, but we're not doing that. And the guy I was all ready in the weeds to take, Shiker just took. So I'm really not happy. But I'll regroup. I guess I would take Kirby Dach. Detroit has a lot of young forwards. I know Doc is going to probably take a little bit more time. He's a bigger guy, but again, he has a very high ceiling. He's a 200-foot center. There's a lot of upside here. He's got all the tools. He's got hockey smarts. He's got vision. He can play with a little bit of an edge. Like I said, bigger guys usually take a little bit more time. But if I'm staying here at six, I think he has one of the better upsides of these forwards, I believe he's 6'4", 200, if I have that correct. I thought I wrote that down somewhere. But,
yeah, right at 198.
Okay, I really love Cousins because, in a nutshell, Cousins has size, skill, and speed. I mean, that's a pretty good trio. But I would take Kirby Dach for Detroit at six.
You mentioned the Dylan Cousins and the speed in his skating. That is the one knock on Kirby Dach, is that his skating ability is considered average. And a lot of that was Nick Hague's original downfall coming – not downfall, but knock on him. And he's done a lot of work in the last 2 years with the Golden Knights working on his skating. So, you know, when you grow up to 6'4", 200 pounds, and you're 18 years old, there's a little bit of an adjustment period that has to come into that. So it might be a knock on. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, in 2009, the Islanders had the first overall pick, and the name escapes me of who they took. But what I remember about the player was he was clearly the number one guy, but they were kind of saying the same things about his skating. And, again, forgetting his name, he did do a very good job of improving his skating. Not that he's an elite skater, but he turned out to be a top player, to say the least. So, like you said, he is 18, takes a little bit more time. Like I said, you might have to, you know, some of these other guys in the top 10, they might get to the NHL quicker than Doc. But, again, we're talking about an 18-year-old. So even if it takes two and a half years, we're still talking about someone who's going to be 20, 21 by the time it's in the NHL. You're not that far away.
All right. We're going to go over to Dan Harrison, upstate New York. And if Buffalo can get their previous high draft picks, some talent around them, it might be a forfecta, if that's even a word. We were talking about in a couple years that the metropolitan area down there is going to be a gauntlet to run. If you got to go through upstate and Eichel and Dahlin and company get it together, it could be a really rough road through New York here in the next couple, 3 years, and the Buffalo Sabres are on the clock.
And like Chris just mentioned with Detroit, I think Buffalo's biggest need is on defense. You know, there's an awful lot of rumblings here in Tampa that Sabres and the Lightning are trying to work out a trade that would send Ristolainen here to Tampa. If in fact that happens, again, that just echoes the fact that I think Buffalo's biggest need is on defense. But I would agree with Chris's take on it that I don't know if Soderstrom or Broberg are guys that are somebody that you take at the seventh spot. That said, the Buffalo Sabres, I would take Trevor Zegras. I think this guy has the ability to be an elite player in the NHL. He's a two-way forward. I think a lot of teams have to answer the question, do you go with the best player on the board at the time, or do you try to fill a need? Well, I think ideally you try to do both with the same pick. But if the best player for your specific need is too far down on board, you have to go with the best available, and that's what I'm doing here with Zegras.
Yeah, it's 6 foot, 175, left-handed shot, comes with speed, comes with a 200-foot game, kind of a pest. He plays that physical, pesty kind of gritty game, and I'm quoting off a website, abrasive and gets under the skin of his opponents. He's committed to Boston University, so probably let him go at least a couple years at Boston U and see where he ends up as far as the Buffalo Sabres plans go. The Buffalo dismantled their team years ago and tried to go with the grit game, and they're trying to get more speed and skill back into their game recently. Can you imagine if Buffalo could have somehow managed to have Jack Eichel, Evander Kane, Ryan O'Reilly, and Robin Lehner on the same roster?
Zegras
is off the board to the Buffalo Sabres. That brings Edmonton Oilers and Mark Scheig on the clock, sir. Who does Edmonton take?
If it breaks this way, unlike Chris's pick when the Red Wings were upset, the Oilers couldn't be more thrilled because they have forever see Yamamoto Kyler been looking for a goal-scoring winger, and there is no better goal-scoring winger in this draft than Cole Caulfield. And I would think that if it ends up where he if he falls like this, Edmonton is all over. I would think they would have thought that he would have been gone, just given the overall talent that he has. He's got the Alex DeBrincat size and 5'7", but over 70 goals. I mean, he knows how to fill the net. And I mean, just we don't need to make it harder than it is. If you can score goals like that, you have a place. And put him next to Connor McDavid. Oh God.
Yeah, how
that's
about
all
it?
I need to say about that. So.
And he did that playing with Jack Hughes, as his center. So you figure that production can continue with a player like McDavid. You mentioned the knock on him, that obviously 5'7", 163, obviously speedy, skill, 72 goals and 100 points in 64 games with Hughes. Broke the career record for goals with 126, previously held by Phil Kessel. And on his way to Wisconsin University. But, yeah, I was thinking that Caulfield might go to Detroit at 6. With Stevie Y coming in, having a sniper with speed and skill might be a nice tool in their toolbox. But he came down to Edmonton, and if he's there, yeah, Edmonton's going to jump all over him. Chris, we're going to Anaheim, the ninth overall pick.
I just have a
pick.
Quick question for Shiger. I think it's a good pick. The only question I would have if I was an Oiler fan, any hesitancy given that they drafted Yamamoto a couple years ago in the first round, who's one of their better prospects, who's also a smaller guy, does that scare you at all?
Not at all.
Okay.
We're talking about a much better player here. So just from the skill standpoint, yeah. From just an overall finishing standpoint, me personally, I wouldn't have any reservation. I wouldn't expect them to either.
Okay.
And Chris,
to
your point, they've gone through, 12 general managers and 8 coaches since they drafted Yamamoto. So you've got a whole new regime in there. And bringing in their own player like that, I don't think will be – if they like the player, I think they'll take him. Go ahead.
All right, so now I'm up at Anaheim at number 9. And once again, I'm cursing Mark Scheich's name because he just took the player that I was going to take. The guy who's kind of – I don't want to say he's under the radar, but he might actually be slightly fallen due to an unfortunate incident situation. The guy I really love in this draft is Peyton Krebs. And this guy has – I love this line I read about him. First-line talent, but fourth-line work ethic. He's a skilled forward. He's a playmaker. He's got great hockey IQ. He's got a great motor. He's got leadership qualities. A lot of upside. Now, he did tear his Achilles within the last couple of weeks. He's still visiting teams at post-surgery. Says a lot about the kid. I don't think he's going to, I could be wrong on this, slip too far in this draft because simply being, everyone knows that it's going to take a couple of years. You shouldn't be rushing these kids. It costs him a spot or two, but I really like this player for Anaheim who needs to go to the next generation with their offense. They have some good – most of their young prospects knocking on the door. They do have a number of young forwards, but on the main roster, they're already kind of in good situation with young defense. So I'm going to go Krebs here at number 9 for Anaheim.
Peyton Krebs, center. Okay, he's dropped down, or he's actually higher than where my reference material has him taken. 6 foot 183, left-handed shot. Captain of his junior team and Canada's team at the U18 Worlds. Skating, hockey IQ, but not afraid to. Play physical and go in the dirty areas to get his points, plays in all 3 zones. And just let me give some credit here. I'm using the hockeywriters.com, newsday.com, and the hockeynews.com as a combination of player synopsis and
you know, descriptions of the guys and their stats and everything. So it's not like I'm spitting all this off the top of my head. I got to give credit where credit is due. So no, good pick for Anaheim. He's a little above where most of the other publications that I've looked at have him taken. If we can get Dan and one more out of Scheig before we have to let Mark Scheig go, Dan is on the board with Vancouver.
I apologize. I had a problem with it. I didn't hear Mark's pick for Edmonton.
Mark took Cole Caulfield for
Edmonton. Yeah, Cole Caulfield.
And I took,
he is off the
and
board.
And I took Peyton Krebs.
Yeah, I got that. I was able to get back in. But Vancouver, I think that the need is offense, and I think a big forward, goal-scoring forward, is what they're looking for. At number 10, I think Vancouver Canucks are taking Matthew Boldy.
Yep, and he's slotted right there between 9 to 12 on most things I've been looking at. 6'2", 200 pounds, left-handed shot.
You got to like that size, and I think that's something that Vancouver will like if he's available for them at number 10.
Yeah, with Pettersson and Besser being the young guns there, if you add another piece with a little bit more physicality to their game than what either of those two guys bring, and can still put the puck in the net, find open areas on the ice, and you know, contribute to his teammates' success, even from the wing. Boldy's a good pick there for Vancouver. He's going to be going to Boston College, so look for him in a few years down the road in Vancouver. And now, Scheiger, this is going to be your last pick, and we'll let you go, sir. Thank you for taking the time with us today. Go ahead and give us Philadelphia's pick at number 11.
All right. Well, it's interesting because this is the point in the draft now where you get outside the top 10 where – you're going to start to see some interesting things. A lot of teams trying to call up, you know, maybe a particular player is available. It's going to be really interesting and probably a lot of differences of opinion here, but I want to give a little shout out to Charlie O'Connor from the Athletic Philadelphia. Does a great job covering them. Somebody that I highly respect and follow. And in the mock draft he did in the Athletic, they ended up taking a defenseman, which kind of caught me off guard a little bit, because I thought that their defenseman was kind of their area of strength, you know, with Goss Despair. I know he had a down year, and Provorov and Sanheim and some of the other guys are on their way up. But, you know, he gave a well thought out explanation of trying to take a defenseman, and he ended up taking Victor Soderstrom. In my mind, though, I kind of look the other way. I really feel like that they need finishers, and the next best finisher is still on the board, even though I know he's got a lot of flack around him about his effort and, you know, different things like that, but he scored 50 goals in his draft year. And to me, that's a perfect fit for a team that it could use some more goals. So for that 11th pick for the Philadelphia Flyers, they are taking Arthur Kaliev.
Right winger, Hamilton in the OHL. Another winger with size, 6'2", 194, putting 51 goals and 51 assists on the board. I always love to see that balanced scoring coming from the wing. If you're putting the puck in the net and chalking up, you know, close to equal number of assists, I love seeing the balance in that kind of game. Only the fourth OHLer to score 50 before his 18th birthday. We'll see if he can grow into that with Philadelphia. They've got a lot of good centers there, so they'll be dishing the puck to him in a couple years down the road. Shai, thank you so much for your time today. We know you got it called into work, and we appreciate your time. You guys follow Scheiger on Twitter at Mark Scheig, S-C-H-E-I-G. Columbus Blue Jackets, he did a great job for us during the season. There was always a lot to talk about with Columbus coming down the stretch. And a great conversation with Mark as always. So make sure you follow him there and go to thehockeywriters.com for all of his Columbus content. Sir, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Tiger.
All right, so Shiger is off the board. That's going to bring Chris in to take care of the Minnesota Wild at number 12, sir. Who you got?
Well, this guy is kind of, and I can see this playing out, falling a bit. He was a guy who just a month ago a lot of people had in the top five, and that's to butcher his name, Polkozinny, Vasily Polkozinny. Well, I'm probably butchering his name, but I know he didn't have a great tournament in May, and I know he signed to play in the KHL the next 2 years, and there's always, you know, worrying about having to wait on Russian players or have Russian players leave. But at this spot of the draft, you know, this guy has been described as a high-end offensive winger who's a pit bull, and he's got size and he's got skill. He plays with an edge. You know, again, he's got the 2-year commitment to the KHL, so you're taking him and then you're waiting. But I think what's at this point, I think this is Minnesota's best bet, and that's who I, if I'm the Wild GM, that's who I'm taking at 12.
Yeah, this player seems to have some of the questions that Russian players have been saddled with, some stereotypically, some not so much. See Vadim Shipakov and the Vegas Golden Knights, and also see Nikita Gusev for the other side, who's been nothing but professional, the consummate professional with the Golden Knights. And the interviews we've seen after the season was that he's going to give the Vegas Golden Knights every chance to come and sign him first, because they're the team that gave him the chance to come over, as opposed to the other guy who wouldn't even report to the minor league, even though he was, you know, a numbers game and being waivers eligible. So this guy seems to be on the fence between that. He's got 2 years left in Russia at the minimum. 6'1", 196, left-handed shot. So that's – if Minnesota goes with Vasily at number 12, that's obviously a project and a couple years down the road. I've seen his rankings as high as fifth to the Kings, and as low as 15th to Montreal and some other mock drafts. So this is a player that – you know, obviously has the skill and the size to be upper echelon talent, but I think maybe go ahead.
Keep in mind, Mark, keep in mind, and Dan can attest to this, Stevie Y at 6 with the Red Wings, if he stays there, has not been afraid to draft Russians. Dan can go into more chapter and verse and I history in Tampa with that. So I think that's a possibility for him there as well.
Yeah,
you know,
go ahead, Dan.
Great. Eiserman, I mean, from his time as a player in Detroit, I mean, the Russian Five,
sure,
that was during the Eiserman era, and in his 8 years here as GM in Tampa, he never hesitated. In fact, Gusev was originally drafted by the Lightning.
That's correct.
I got a feeling, and Chris said this earlier, that I think after the first two picks, we may see some trades moving up and down in Chicago. You know, we both laughed when he suggested there a possible trade between Chicago and Detroit. But
yeah,
that might actually work if Eiserman had a knack for making draft day deals to either gain a pick by moving down or to get the guy he wanted, and he's never hesitated taking Russians. He has that ability where other teams hesitate because, as you said, Mark, they're not sure how easy it is to be able to bring them over to North America. Eiserman doesn't shy away from that at all. So I think if Vasily is available and Detroit cannot make a trade, I think we see him go at 6.
Well, the one thing I will say about a Chicago-Detroit trade, now that Stevie Y is in Detroit, is there is a relationship with Scotty Bowman, obviously, over in Chicago. So
they're not afraid to pick up the phone, I wouldn't imagine, and have a chat about it at least. Be right. Interesting if that goes down. it would certainly be a story to write, that's for sure. Anyway, is Mark's gone, Chris?
No, Dan's up at 13.
That's
going to
bring
Florida.
Dan here with the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, and the Florida Panthers, you know, they made big headline news immediately after the season by announcing they signed Joe Quenneville to coach them. I think there's a lot of anticipation in South Florida now for the upcoming season, and their biggest need is on defense. And, you know, we talked about Chris talked about it at the sixth pick, and I talked at the seventh pick that even though the needs might be stronger for a defenseman, that just weren't a defenseman that you might want to take that early. But now at 13, I think it's time. And there's three or four, five defensemen right now that you could pick at 13, between 13 and 18. And you'd end up with a good pick. I think Florida would take Philip Broberg. He's a big defenseman, Swedish. I like his size. And from everything I've read, he's kind of a Klingberg like player. That's who I think Florida will, if he's available, Florida will end up taking Philip Broberg at 13.
Yeah, he was named the best defenseman at the U18 Worlds for Sweden that won the gold medal in the U18s. Rated a two-way defenseman, upper echelon, borderline elite skating ability with a 6'3", 200-pound frame. So when you get a big body that has elite skating like that, that's a good pick. And if Broberg comes off at 13, this could start a run of some of the other available defensemen in the next few picks here. A good pick for Florida. I think that would be a good fit. I think that's a good pick for them if he is still on the board, is what I'm trying to say. Okay, Florida's off the board. Let's go to number 14, Arizona Coyotes. Chris, who you got?
Yeah, I'm going to talk this out because this was going to be Shiger's pick. I'm going to talk this out with Dan, and we're going to see if we can figure it out here. Now, clearly, right, Dan, Arizona needs some more offensive punch on the main roster. They did have the top, the fifth overall pick, Barton Hayden. I don't think he's that far away at center. Their two other top prospects are on the blue line. So, you know, kind of they're not heavily loaded either forward or defense in their pipeline. They could use some more offensive punch. But, again, at this point, I think they'd be doing themselves a disservice by not taking the best player on the board. I think there's more possibilities here for defense than forwards at 14. But the question I have for you, Dan, if you're Arizona, I don't have it in front of me, but Antti Raatna has got, what, three more years to go on his deal? How much would you consider Spencer Knight here for Arizona at 14?
You know, it's funny, Chris. You and I talked earlier in the week about goalies going in the first round. To take a goalie at 14, you know, we look back and the earliest over the last 10 years that a goalie's been taken was 19 by the Lightning when they drafted Vasilevskiy a few years ago. I don't know. I would agree with your original premise that I think Arizona would be looking for some offensive help. And the guy who stuck out for me of the available players is Alex Newhook. I think he's got speed. I think that if there's no question that Spencer Knight is the best goalie in the draft. But does a team pull a trigger, for a goalie at 14? Maybe they do. But I think they're, you know, this is another team that surprised many last year because they're knocking on the door of the playoffs. And if and again, it's not like Newhook's going to come in, you know, it'll be a couple years before he's ready to go. But it's certainly going back to Mark's point earlier in the show when he said, you know what, if you need a defenseman and you have defenseman, but the defenseman is the best player on the board, you take him because you can never have enough talent. I would agree with that. And that being said, you know, I don't think they could go wrong with any defenseman, but if they're looking for offense, and I think they will be, I think Newhook, because through my work, my research, I had Newhook take in 9, 10, 11, and 12 in that range. And if he's still available at 14, I'd grab him.
I agree with you. And what I like about Newhook, too, is not only is he really good offensively, and he's a good skater, and he's got speed and all that, but he's also the scouting report on him also is he's a really good defensive player and a heck of a penalty killer. So you're getting a very well-rounded player here. I agree with you. I think Newhook would be a pick for Arizona, which makes a lot of sense. Don't you agree, Mark?
Yeah, I'm looking at Arizona's goaltending pipeline on Elite Prospects right now. Since we're roundtabling this pick, there's excuse me. There's
and
not.
Don't forget they have a young. And in terms of the real world, in terms of what will really happen, and we're doing this if this was us. But in terms of what Arizona, you know, they had a very young GM, obviously, and the young generation does not really believe in taking goalies that this high. Now, whether or not this will be the exception to the rule, I think it will be a consideration for Arizona. I wouldn't fault them if they took Spencer Knight, but I think Newhook makes sense. But what are you thinking, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at these numbers for their prospects. Obviously, their next up on the board would be the AHL, and you've got Aiden Hill with a .906 save percentage. You got Hunter Miska with an .895. You got Merrick Madsen with an .889. That's not blowing me away. You got a Russian kid in the OHL with a .910. They have someone
Kempler,
in the
kit. And Kempler and Ratnan are not old, but they're veterans. So
yeah, that's not your prospect. I mean, if you're taking a goalie this high in the draft, you're thinking two or three years down the line at least. You're going to want him to finish his junior years and then maybe college or at least 1 or 2 years in the AHL. And I don't see anything in their pipeline that's blowing me away where this is their, you know, heir apparent to the journeyman
veteran they
have on their roster.
I think Hill by the Hockey News is their highest ranked goalie in the pipeline.
Yeah. I mean, if they, you know, if they want to go scoring and they're, you know, philosophically against pulling a goalie that high, then yeah, Newhook's probably the best guy left on the board if they're not going defense. They do need to have a little more punch up front, and superior skating, stick handling skills, high hockey IQ, 38 goals, 64 assists in 53 games, MVP of the British Columbia Hockey League. So he's probably got leadership abilities there as well. Not a bad pick. If they're going scoring forward center, certainly that's the way you go. So is that your
and
pick? We're taking him off the board?
Yeah, that's the pick. We're going to go with Newhook at Arizona at 14.
Okay, well, we're going to put Montreal on the clock. Number 15, our last pick here in the fourth annual NHL mock draft on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Dan, you're on the board with Montreal.
Oh, actually, that's me.
Is that you just did Arizona?
Yeah, me and Dan did.
That was
Arizona was Shike's pick. We did
okay,
it kind of together.
I got you. We're not going to. Okay, sure. Okay, coming to you, Chris, then, with Montreal.
And I would take Victor Sadish from here. Puck moving,
yeah.
D-man, you know, good vision, smooth skating, good two-way game, smart player, mobile. There's a lot to like here. If you're Montreal, I think you'd be very happy taking Soderstrom with the 15th pick.
Yeah, for sure. He's, you know, if we're going to do the run on defensemen here after Broberg goes, then yeah, Soderstrom's the way you want to go. 6'1", 180. The skating's described as gifted and graceful. Has a great shot, could be a future, you know, if we're projecting down the road, he could be launching that shot on the second power play unit there in Montreal in a few years. He already has 44 games playing in Sweden's top pro league. So, you know, he's already has experience playing against, you know, full grown men, if you will. He's got one more year on his deal in with his team there in Sweden. So, you know, you let him finish out his deal, and then you see if he wants to come over then, sign his entry-level contract, and get him in the system. So not a bad pick for Montreal, grabbing the defenseman at 15. Well, we do want to get into the Vegas Golden Knights. They pick 17th, and we got Colorado in the way here, so we got to put an asterisk on that. And assuming that Colorado doesn't take the player that we're going to talk about or players, let's start with Dan. Me and Chris cover the Golden Knights all the time. So, Dan, give me a quick rundown on what your thoughts are on the Vegas Golden Knights prospect pool and what the needs are in the farm system there for the Vegas Golden Knights.
Well, I think that, you know, you mentioned earlier they in that Mark Stone deal, they gave up a probably their top defensive prospect in Banstrom. I think that their biggest need, and I think what they're going to look for, like you said, we just started the run on defensemen, and there's still three of them that they can pick from. But the speed of that team, I like Cam York as a defenseman for them at 17.
Okay, Chris, you're George McPhee. You're about to hand the reins off to Kelly McCrimmon. Obviously, there's a brain trust going on here. So if Dan's going to do our GM, you're Kelly McCrimmon. Give me the other side of the coin, play devil's advocate to the need to take a defenseman there with the 17th pick.
Well, I like Cam York, and I think he's going to be
like
right around
too.
This area. I like both Cam York and Thomas Hawley. I think these guys are safe. They, you know, I don't know where this became as a bad term, but I think they're safe picks. I think these guys, to me, have future second pairing D-men written all over them. York has probably got a little bit more upside offensively. I think those two guys are considerations on defense. I think at this point, if you were looking at forwards, it might be a little bit more risky, but maybe more upside with a few guys, one of which is Raphael Lové, the big power forward. Again, those guys usually take a little bit more time, but Vegas is in a position to do that. And then we have Spencer Knight,
yes, we do.
I would say would be – now, that is assuming, because I've read a lot of people are conjecturing that they think Colorado at 16 could be a player for Spencer Knight. Now, the big question for me there is, obviously, one, how they feel about Spencer Knight, who is – the book on him or the scouting report is he's a great athlete and he has strong fundamentals. So it's a pretty good combination. You know, where does Phil Grubauer, who's, you know, in the prime of his career, and now I get it, you take this goalie, you're looking, let's be honest, you're looking 3 years down the road. And so does Colorado do that? Grubauer will be 3 years older. From a Vegas standpoint, as we've talked about, Mark-Andre Fleury, who I believe is 34 now, He just is entering his new three-year extension. So the timeline there could really work for Vegas. I think assuming Colorado doesn't get in the way. I mean, if Colorado takes Cam York, I think Thomas Hartley is a guy to look out for as well for Vegas. So do you go defense there, or who could be on the team within a little bit quicker, or do you go Spencer Knight, assuming that he's there? I think it's a tough call. You could make an argument either way. Spencer Knight intrigues me. I know it's more of a longer-term investment. I would be very tempted to take him if I was Vegas.
Yeah, I agree. The Cody Glass came to the Chicago Wolves and completely, I think, surprised the organization by how well he played. I believe it was a Kelly McCrimmon quote that they were talking about Cody Glass and his you know, the fortunate run that the Chicago Wolves had to the AHL final. He had some very big moments, tied for the team lead in goal scores during the playoffs, a couple overtime game winners along the way. And they look at this playoff run at Cody Glass as the quote was, an extra season of development we feel Cody has gotten by being able to play with the Wolves this year in the playoffs. And to me, that's, if you read between the lines and you know, all the lines, they do have their cap problem that they have to deal with. Obviously, Cody Eakin is one of the names that would give cap relief. And if we've talked about this, if they're putting out kind of smoke signals like that, you pay attention here. The Golden Knights development camps, June 25th to 29th at the City National Arena. Open to the public. If you're here in Vegas, go down and watch Cody Glass play. If he fits in well and dominates that camp, if he looks like he is a man among boys in that group, I think that they're thinking that Cody Glass might be ready to take that third-line center role. And if he can have Gusev and Tuck on his wings, that's a heck of a third line for Vegas following the Carlson line and the Stastny line. So if you're going to – let's say Cody Glass is up for good. There's another Suzuki that was drafted by the Vegas Golden Knights who's no longer present. And 6'1", 180-pound Ryan Suzuki.
Yeah.
If you want to build a little more depth at center, because in my opinion, there's two defensemen that they think may make the big club out of camp. And White Cloud is a – Jesse Granger, who writes for The Athletic, I want to give him credit as well. He's been on local radio a lot talking about the Wolves during their playoff run here. And he says Zach Whitecloud has maybe moved ahead as far as the timeline of Nick Hague. Nick Hague's skating has improved tremendously. His offensive upside is starting to assert itself. But Zach Whitecloud right now has, and I'll quote Jesse, fewer holes in his game and is a more NHL ready player. And then Nick Hague is right behind him. And then you have Bischoff, who's coming, and a couple other D-men that are a year or two away, which is a timeline factor with the age of some of the defensemen that the Golden Knights have, with Holden and England maybe playing one more year, maybe not. Colin Miller possibly being rumored to be on the move. So I think your D pipeline, although there are good, I like York as well. If they're thinking to replenish the centered position, which isn't quite as deep, I wouldn't be surprised if they go Ryan Suzuki there.
I think you can make arguments for those three guys, and it really comes down to their scouts and what they think of them. Obviously, Colorado could have an impact, although Colorado could pick somebody else. But yeah, I could see those three names as very distinct possibilities there.
You mentioned Lavoie, too, I think, on the board. If they want to get a little bit bigger down the middle in the third-line center than they have been, and anything that's in the pipeline, I think Lavoie might not be a bad pick either. He's 6'4", 200 pounds. Strong skating ability. Again, when you have the size and the skating ability in a combination, that fits kind of what the Golden Knights like to do, because everyone thinks speed, skill, but this is a physical hockey team as well. So Lavoie might be someone to keep an eye on too. I don't have a problem if Spencer Knight's available that you take him at 17. I don't feel like using a first round pick on a goalie is a mistake. Philosophically, a lot of teams just feel that way, that you can get a goalie and develop him and trust your staff in the next 3 to 4 years to bring a goalie along. If you think that this Spencer Knight kid is got the ceiling of being a potential franchise goaltender who could be ready, maybe a year or two after this 3-year deal on Marc-Andre Fleury is up, and you think Legacy and Dance can bridge that gap into a Spencer Knight, then I have no problem taking Spencer Knight either.
I'll give you one last nugget before we get to the Stanley Cup Finals, and from a Vegas nugget. Remember, one of George McPhee's last drafts with the Capitals, it might have been his very last one. If it was, it was one of his last drafts. He had a pick around 20, 21, 22, and he had a very young Braden Holtby on the main roster who looked like going to be their goalie and has been for years to come. And what did George McPhee do? He took Samsonov, who was one of the Capitals' top current prospects, the goalie,
there you go,
out of Russia. And so, you know, because he felt that was the best player on the board and the best move to make, even though he had a young guy in Holtby. So George McPhee is not afraid to take a goalie around this spot. Samsonov is one of the top 20 prospects in all hockey. He is one of the top goalie prospects in all hockey. So just to throw that out there in terms of the possibility, more food for thought in terms of Vegas taking Spencer Knight.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Excuse me. I've seen him off the board to Florida at 13. I believe.
Yeah, well, NHL.com guys did that, which surprised me.
I see him off the board on the Newsday mock draft that I was using too. That surprises me too, and I think I don't know if I'm Florida and I'm going to sign Bobrovsky and that's settled.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that's going to be a long-term deal. I don't think you draft a goalie that high if you're investing the next 7 years, 6 years of your franchise into a goalie. There'll be other goalies available in the next 3 years that you can stock your pipeline with. I think they go more, another direction.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, we just finished the season there with St. Louis and Boston. Let's get into the Stanley Cup. That's going to conclude the mock draft portion of the programming. So we wanted to do this with Shai, but he was limited on time today. So let's do a little bit of roundtable here on the Stanley Cup Finals. Obviously the Bennington angle, did a rookie goaltender on the road at Boston in game 7. Did he stand out to me. Ryan O'Reilly had a great playoff run. I still think maybe Rask could probably got some votes for Conn Smythe. Phenomenal play, but when it mattered most, I think Rask was just a little bit above average. I would have liked to see that first goal stopped. The second goal, put it on Marchand. I don't know what he's thinking there. You're going for a line change, but there's only 7 seconds left in the period. I don't, what are you doing? But anyway, what are your thoughts on the Stanley Cup final and the St. Louis Blues?
Well, you know what? Hats off to the Blues. You know, obviously, you know, a lot of people thought them to be a Cinderella story of sorts because they were in last place in the Western Conference at the beginning of January. But you know what? No team in the offseason last year made more personnel moves than St. Louis. And clearly, it takes some time for new players on a team to begin to gel and work cohesively. In fact, it cost their inability to do that in October, November, cost their coach
his job. But I think, you know, hats off to them. They had to play well in front of a rookie goalie who himself played, you know, on his head at times. You know, in game five, though, he looked like a rookie. Or was it game five or game six? You know, the one game where he had to get pulled, clearly he looked like a rookie. But you know, St. Louis just never – they never quit. They, like you said, O'Reilly had a great playoff, especially in the final series. You know, kudos to them, their first cup in franchise history. And you can't say, you know, congratulations enough, especially knowing what they had to do, first of all, just to make the playoffs, but then to go on the run that they did throughout the Western Conference before beating Boston in the Cup. It was a very good series, I thought. I mean, Game 7, like you said, rookie goalie winning on the road, who would have thought? You know, if you submit that script to Hollywood, they reject it because nobody would believe it.
Yeah, I think it'd be right underneath the Vegas Golden Knights script from two seasons ago, on the bottom of the waste paper basket. You know what stuck out to me, Chris, was the St. Louis Blues' ability to keep what many people were saying throughout the playoffs is the best first line in hockey off the score sheet at even strength. Bergeron, Pastrnak, and Marchand had a combined total of one goal and one assist, even strength, in this seven-game series. And once they figured out how to kind of stay out of the penalty box, which was what we harped on in our Stanley Cup final preview show, and in the first first couple episodes, the first three games, I believe they gave up 14 power plays, and game three, when like Dan said, was when Bennington really, you know, looked a little bit out of sorts, giving up four of those goals were power play goals. Boston was 4-for-4 on the power play in game three, but 0-for-5 in game one and 0-for-5 in game two. Once they were able to stay out of the box and keep that game even strength for the most part, St. Louis was able to keep that big three, and Krejci limited to a large extent, off that scoreboard and decidedly win the even strength battle. And that's where I think the series was won.
No, I think it's an excellent point. Two things occur to me, and these are more big picture things after the series was over. And one was, what a frustrating, rough loss for the Boston Bruins and their fans. I mean, if you go back and think about what could have been, I mean, the first two periods, from puck possession to territorially to opportunities, I mean, Boston really dominated that game. I mean, they outshot them 23-10 in the first two periods. But St. Louis converted on their opportunities, converted on, you know, Boston's mistakes or you know, maybe the first goal, like you said, Rask, in that game, you need him to be special. Clearly, Billington was special, but yet Boston couldn't overcome that. I mean, there was one play, I'm trying to remember if it was in the second period or the third period, I think it was Nordstrom, and Billington made a ridiculous pad save, but if he lifts the puck, it's a goal. So I think of especially those first 12 minutes or so, if Boston gets a goal and goes up 1-0, what could have been. So I look at it from that perspective.
Yeah.
And then from a Blues perspective and a league perspective, I look at the last 2 years, and we have the Capitals win last year, and we have the Blues win this year. And these teams, even though they're very in different conferences, there's a lot of similarities. It's the first cup for both franchises. Well, for the last, really going back to the 80s, both teams have had most of the time have been really strong teams. And have been the team saying, well, watch out for Washington to make a run. Or watch out for St. Louis to make a run. And both teams really have, you know, had playoff frustrations on top of, despite the fact that they had really good teams, which they were right there and they just couldn't break through. And I think both, and they both considered top-notch franchises, but they just couldn't, they just haven't been able to break through. And now we've seen in the last 2 years, these two franchises break through. So it kind of was a little bit of a theme for me for the Caps and the Blues these last 2 years to finally have broken through. And I think I see a lot of similarities between the two clubs.
Yeah, I agree. And stick cap to Chara. I mean, it came out yesterday that his jaw was broken on both sides, and the right side of his jaw was in two pieces completely.
Oh.
And they did put pins in it. And come on, man, that's ridiculous. Char has always been a warrior, and I got to tip my hat to Zdeno Chara for playing through that. That's ridiculous. The other thing too that stands out, the Blues, I think, were physically able to wear down that front line and the rest of the Boston Bruins. It shows me that the movement towards speed and skill is all well and good, but physical, responsible, two-way hockey can still get it done in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And boy, that's what these St. Louis Blues were. They had Sundquist suspended and Barbashev suspended for game 6 later in the series. And I think that contributed a lot to the game 6 result. Barbashev's a big part of that presence for St. Louis. But it just goes to show that a little bit of that old time hockey can still be successful when you have guys like a Ryan O'Reilly and a Tarasenko. Braden Schenn contributed some big goals throughout this playoff run. When you have skill and speed, but you're also willing to play that dirty physical style and put your body on the line and be responsible defensively and not just hightail it out of the zone and hope you're going to win 6-5. That might work in the regular season, but when you come Stanley Cup playoffs time, it becomes a different game. And the St. Louis Blues proves to me there's still a place for the 6'2", 220-pound power forward in this league. And for me, I'm glad to see success come from that style. I like speed. I like skill. I like seeing goals scored. But, you know, the big attraction for me is two-way responsible. I'd rather watch a 2-1 hockey game than a 6-3 hockey game. And kudos to the St. Louis Blues for showing that style can still be successful. And, you know, Chris, you mentioned it too. Washington plays that hybrid style game too. They're certainly not afraid to be a physical defensive presence, especially with Trotz there. But also, obviously, they have a high-end talent and skill on that roster as well. And I think the solution going forward isn't one way or the other, but to get that hybrid style. And Vegas plays that style as well. So that's the other takeaway I'll get from the Stanley Cup Final is that some of that old-time hockey is still going to win you some championships, sir.
Yeah, and I got one last – as we wrap up, I got one last one for Dan, and that is Dan – you know, it seems to be the tea leaves have said, those who have read the tea leaves believe that there's going to be a lot of activity between now and draft weekend. And we started seeing a couple moves yesterday before free agency. We're going to see a lot of trades. There's a lot of motivated teams that appears out there, be it salary cap crunch, be it wanting to get better and address certain needs. A good team like, let's say, the Islanders in offense, or a team like Vancouver who wants to take the next step, or a team like Minnesota who wants to change their structure with their one year old GM, if you will. So, what say you? Do you expect a lot of movement in the league over the next few days?
Oh yeah, I definitely do. You know, think about if you're a GM and you're looking at the next season or two, you're not going to sit back and wait because you've got an expansion draft coming up. So, and like you just said, there's a couple of teams that, and let's just take the Islanders, for example. Very few, if any, had them picking, you know, had them making the playoffs, let alone doing as well as they did. You know, obviously Trotz deserves an awful lot of credit for that, but you know, the team as a whole played very well considering they lost, you know, their captain to free agency in the offseason last year. I think we're going to see an awful lot of moves from teams that are on the precipice of really exploding. And just to Mark's point about, you know, this is a copycat league, like most major sports. And, you know, it's a good point about Washington and St. Louis. The last two cup champions are kind of a hybrid. You know, it's clear from sitting here in Tampa, I've seen the Lightning become one of the leading teams in terms of that speed and high hockey IQ. They have a bunch of 5'9" to 6-foot players who are very fast and can you know, can put the puck in the net in a 6-5 game.
Absolutely.
But they're lacking, you know, a Tom Wilson type or a Ryan O'Reilly type, or some of that physicality that we've seen. Now, is that, you know, I like the term hybrid because, you know, I hadn't thought of that, to be honest with you. I've been thinking, well, it's one way or the other. And maybe it's sour grapes on my part, but I thought, well, yeah, of course we see it. We see the physicality return in the playoffs because the refs swallow their whistles. How many years have we heard that the refs don't want to decide the outcome of a series or a playoff game because they want the players to decide the outcome. And I think that's the problem because, you know, that's the problem that GMs are faced with. Do you build a team that can win enough games to secure a playoff spot? Or, you know, do you try to find that hybrid mix to be able to qualify? Because, you know, a 6'2", 6'3" guy who can't skate very fast, let me tell you, that formula isn't going to work in the regular season. And you run the risk that you don't even qualify for the playoffs. Then, you know what, your physicality isn't going to mean a hell of beans come playoff time. So I'm interested to see. I think there's, you know, I personally think there's going to be an awful lot of trades made on draft day because I think from pick 3 through 15, I think we can see 3 or 4 or 5 teams wanting to move up or down in that grouping there because there's a rash of forwards being taken in the top 10. Then there's a rash of defensemen, you know, let's say from 10 to 20.
Yep.
So it depends on their need. It depends on what their wants. I think that's going to lead to it. Plus, you've got some teams who really need, you know, we've got some high-end free agents, and you've got some teams who've got an awful lot of cap room, and I think that's just going to bode well for an awful lot of – I'm expecting an awful lot of action in this offseason.
Yeah, one thing real quick, Dan, to your point, swallowing the whistle, the refs don't want to decide the games. I think we saw in these playoffs that swallowing the whistle does decide games, or creating penalties out of whole cloth that didn't exist could also decide a game. I've always disliked that phrase and, oh, the refs don't want to decide the game. Well, take the slew foot in the final, for example.
Mm-hmm.
5 seconds later, the puck is in the back of the net. By not calling that penalty, it decided a game. By not calling the penalty, you decided the game. So I think, and a lot of people are going to take that away from this year's playoffs. You had the hand pass, you had the Cody Eakin, not a major, you had the slew foot, you had the player who's not even technically on the ice as he's going for a line change, get called for offsides in Colorado. And to me, I don't see any conclusive replay that his left skate wasn't on the blue line as he goes to wait for the door to open. And then you review that, and that's a reviewable play that can wipe a goal off the board. But a 5-minute major and kicked out of a game is not a reviewable play.
I agree.
The hybrid style is going to continue, and I call it the hybrid style. It is what it is. You need speed, you need skill, you need hockey IQ, you need offensive awareness, but you need physicality. It's a physical game. You need to be able to go in front of the net and stand there and put up with a punishment. You need to go in the corners and be a David Perron type player and keep that puck in that corner and take that abuse. And you like, for example, Jaden Schwartz, he's 5'10", 190 pounds, but he's a banger. He's a gamer. He's a gritty player. 69 games this year in the regular season, 11 goals, 25 assists. When you get that kind of player in the playoffs and there's a little more physicality allowed, Jaden Schwartz going into the Cup final was my dark horse as Conn Smythe. He scored more goals in his first 20 playoff games this year than he did the entire regular season. And he's a guy that can go to the net. All of his goals are dirty goals. He's not a freaking sniper for sure. But there is and always should be a place for that kind of guy in the National Hockey League. It'll be a different game if teams like St. Louis and Washington and Vegas are legislated out of being competitive because they're – a physical team. And when you see teams like Calgary who won the Pacific and, you know, scoring lights out every night, you get in the first round of the playoffs, it's a little different ball game. And if you're not ready for that punishment, you could be going home early.
I agree with you, and I don't want to see a lessening of the physicality because it, like you said, it is a physical game. I guess, you know, the point maybe that I'm trying to make is that, and I know that people say this year in and year out with the playoffs. I take your point about the slew foot. That was a horrible non-call. I mean, it was evident. It was evident the moment I saw it. I said, oh, man, they're going to call it. And they didn't, and it led to a goal. And it led to a game-deciding goal. I get it. But at the same time, to accept the fact that, oh, well, look, it's the playoffs, so the calls, the game is going to be called differently than it has for the previous 82 regular season games. To me, I think if there was a black mark throughout the playoffs, it was in the refereeing. And perhaps the refereeing has not caught up to the size and speed of this game today. And I think maybe that's the issue. And maybe that's why, you know, replays are necessary, why calls are being missed, because the sheer speed of this game today is perhaps beyond the capabilities of the referees.
No, that's
and I'll make
point.
One last yeah. I got one last point in terms of activity and what you guys are saying. You look at the last 2 years, the Vegas Golden Knights, an expansion team, makes the Stanley Cup final. This year, the winner, the St. Louis Blues, on New Year's Day, are last in the Western Conference. You have the Columbus Blue Jackets. Granted, they only got to the second round of the playoffs, but won a series that no one saw coming. You had the New York Islanders who was a, everyone's figured was a surefire lottery team that nearly won at over 100 points, beat the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, granted they lost in the second round too, but I think almost every team in this league has got to feel like, well, why can't our season next year be something special? Like,
right.
You know, why can't we take that great big step, if you will? And I mean, look at the Islanders. What the Islanders did with all basically the same roster, less Tavares. Look what Vegas did. Or look at what where St. Louis was. So I think all these examples. We know the parity is ever more so every year, but I think it's right there in front of them. And I because of all that, I think you're going to see a lot of teams, you know, be aggressive. I mean, outside of, you know, a team like Ottawa, who's clearly rebuilding after the trades they made. No, almost every other team, give or take maybe two or three exceptions, they are going to say to themselves, why not us? And I think that kind of mentality is going to open the door for a lot of moves.
Yeah, absolutely. And one last thing I'll say for the St. Louis Blues, I don't think Craig Berube is going to be going thirsty anytime soon in St. Louis. That dude just got himself a lifetime bar tab out there, huh?
And an extension.
Absolutely. All right, gentlemen, that's going to wrap up our 2019 NHL mock draft, boys. Good job. Shout out to Mark Scheig again. Great job as always. It's a shame, you know, he got called into work on a Saturday, but these things do happen. Chris, I wanted, are we, oh, that's a shame.
I'm here.
Oh, sorry. Are we coming in next week after the draft, or are we going to take a week off and then, hit a draft recap and a free agency preview show? What's our plans coming up?
That's a good question. I would say it's in limbo. Let's see.
Okay.
Let's see. Well, the first round of the draft is next Friday. So
right.
I would say, tentatively speaking, it might make sense to do a show next Saturday. There'll probably be a lot of news in terms of the first round of the draft. And I got to think there's going to be a number of moves this week, be it trades and leading into the draft or guys re-signing. You know, we didn't even get into the whole Jeff Skinner thing, his big new deal. So I think there should be enough there. And then one more show after that in terms of after July 1. And where it is officially the Bobrovskis and the Panarins the world and Duchesne's the world, yada, yada, yada go.
Yep, that sounds good to me. Dan, thanks for joining us today. Great insight as always. Follow Dan Herrjon on Twitter. That's at DanHerrjon for all of his Tampa Bay Lightning content. He links it all through his Twitter page. Where else can they find some of your stuff, Dan?
They can find me on LightningInsider.com. And I had a blast doing this. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. I look forward to this show every year because you don't often get the chance to dive down as deep as we have to get this draft show put together. I usually don't have a chance to get to it, but this kind of forces me to get into the prospects and pay a little more attention throughout the year at risers and fallers and stuff like that in the juniors and the NTDP. So, yeah, it's always a lot of fun, and you did a great job today, Dan. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Chris, that's going to wrap it up. We'll put out some tweets this week at Vegas Hockey Pod. Let everybody know what our firmed up plans for the coming up last few shows before we hit the cottage for vacation here in the summer. Chris, thank you, sir. You guys can follow Chris on Twitter at the NL King and also go over to Ion Isles FS. He's going to, if he hasn't already dropped it, I'm sure he's going to have an article coming out on the free agent signing. Everly just re-upped 5 for 5.5, I believe. Is that right, Chris?
That is correct.
So I'm sure there'll be some content coming out from that. So make sure you follow him on Twitter. Go to Ion Isles FS to pick that up. I am at Vegas Hockey Pod on Twitter. And that's going to do it for this show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. For Chris, Mark, Dan, and Scheiger, We're gone.
We'll be right back.